Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. Thank you for making Locked On MLB your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube and any one of the iOS or Android apps, which you may use to listen to podcasts. You understand listening to podcasts. You're listening to me right now. Today, we're doing part two of our playoff preview. We're covering the National League now, and my co-host, Jeff Carr from Locked On Reds, is going to join me as we break down the National League playoffs, which will feature a 100-win team in the wild card and a sub-90-win team in the division series. Go figure. We played part one earlier today where we talked about the power rankings and the American League. Moving on to the National League now. Follow us at Locked On MLB Pods for Twitter and Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And my guest host, Jeff Carr from Locked On Reds, can be found at Jeff F. Carr, three Fs, on Twitter. This is going to be the National League wildcard preview. And Jeff, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but this does not involve the Cincinnati Reds in any way, shape, or form.
I'm not mad at all. Son of I'm just sorry. That's Jeff, been happening recently. Jeff, I don't know what
this segment is supposed to be about the National League wildcard, but this is actually an intervention. And for the intervention, we have invited Lucas Smith from Locked On Cardinals and Jeff Snyder from Locked On Dodgers to talk about what I'll just go out and say it. It's the single weirdest National League wildcard matchup I've ever seen in my life. And for that, I'm going to bring in Lucas Smith. How you doing, buddy? Jeff Snyder's in front of the wall of bobbleheads. Welcome aboard.
Thanks.
Happy to be here. Cardinals are in the postseason, which I didn't think they would be back in June, so I can't complain too much.
Back in June? Try the middle of September.
True that.
Let me put it this way, because I keep what I call the summer score, where I keep track of since Memorial Day, the days a team is in position for a playoff spot, that adds to your summer score. That's sort of the idea of it's Memorial Day. Hey, is my team in a playoff spot? You keep track of it. The Cardinals were a wild card team on May 31st and were not a wild card team again until September 15th.
Seems about
right. They went all June, July, August, and half of September on the outside looking in. And not only did they clinch it, but they blew the doors off the dump and totally, by channeling the 2007 Rockies, totally destroyed any drama in the National League wildcard race, where it looked like it was going to be a two-team race between the Padres and the Reds. And oh, isn't it cute? The Cardinals bought, oh, they actually think they're going to do something. And suddenly they won. What was their final win total? Was it 90 wins? 91?
90 and 72.
Oh, my. Yeah. 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 Did I mention? Yeah. So that's something else there. Meanwhile, the Dodgers, the defending World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers, put together the single greatest defense for a World Series title since the 1931 Philadelphia Athletics, of Lefty Grove, Jimmy Fox, and Connie Mack. And their reward is to play a potential one-and-done game with the hottest team in baseball. Jeff Snyder, thoughts about your Dodgers?
And the good news is they get to go against a pitcher who's 96 years old. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, it's a quirk of the system, and it's been this way for a long time. And one of my biggest pet peeves is people who are fine with the system until it goes against them, and then suddenly they hate it. And so I'm not going to rail against the system that's been in place for a long time. Dave Roberts said on Sunday, he said, we're going to win the World Series, and we don't really care how we have to get there to do it. So, you know, once the Dodgers beat the Cardinals on Wednesday, it's basically the same as if they had won the division, you know, other than not having home field advantage. But I don't think that's that big a deal. You know, yeah, it's never any fun to have to play one game for everything, because baseball, more than any other sport, any team can win any on any given day. And so, but, you know, that's a flaw in the system, not a flaw in this year's implementation of the system, I guess.
I have to give the Dodgers a ton of credit, though, because
I'm sure that means a lot to them.
But when you think about the fact that they were so great this year, and that the Giants played on an absolutely unreal pace the whole season, and the Dodgers basically matched them game for game. And you had a team that won 107 games, and they didn't clinch until the final day of the season, just shows you that the Dodgers were playing at an unreal pace. And I know everyone said, well, they're such a big budget team filled with tons of stars. They didn't get anything out of Bellinger for most of the year. You had the Bauer fiasco. You had Kershaw injured for a big chunk of the year. Mookie Betts was not an MVP candidate for most of the year. Their MVP candidate was probably Max Muncy. And you had a stretch where Kenley Jansen was completely unreliable as a closer for a while. There were a lot of things that went wrong for a team that wound up winning 106 ball games.
Yeah, don't forget World Series MVP Corey Seager missing a bunch of time too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a season of challenges, and basically what we saw was they tied the franchise best record of 106 wins, 56 losses, you know, the literally one of the best teams in Dodgers history, and that's with all this injury and non-injury related issues that they had to deal with all season. You know, it's pretty remarkable. And the fact is, if the Giants had won 107 games each of the last 8 years, the Dodgers wouldn't have won 8 straight divisions. You know, the only difference this year is the Giants outperforming the Dodgers as a team. I have no team is perfect. And you know, if you're going to deal with an imperfect team that doesn't win 162 games, this is about as good as you could hope for.
I know we're not supposed to look at, I'm sorry. I just, Jeff, I'll let you jump in. I just want to say, I know we're not supposed to look at win losses anymore, but any team whose number three starter is a 20 game winner, you're thinking, okay, yeah. Any other year you lose Clayton Kershaw, it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? This year is like, oh, we lost our number four starter. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the kind of year that Jeff, I didn't mean to step on you. This is the next voice you'll hear is Jeff Carr of Locked On Reds.
Well, and with all due respect to Sully giving credit, which I'm sure could be a sponsored segment coming up here shortly. When I look at the St. Louis Cardinals, I look at the hottest team in baseball. And my first question, Lucas, is how dare you? No, I'm just kidding. Actually, my question is, what's been the biggest factor in this winning streak? And is it going to be something that is prevalent in this wild card game?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, when you win 17 games in a row, a couple things are going to go right along the way. And this Cardinal offense, in my opinion, was the biggest catalyst for that. They average over 5 runs a game in this month. They weren't even close to that number in any of the previous months. You have Tyler O'Neill, Nolan Arenado, and Paul Goldschmidt doing their best impression of the MV3 that the Cardinals saw in the mid-2000s of Roland Evans and Pujols. Tyler O'Neill's having a career year. When you have more than one person in your lineup that can beat you, it makes that lineup deadly. I'm sure Jeff knows that very well, because you have about 1 through 8 that can beat a starting pitcher. Early in the season, the Cardinals had Paul Goldschmidt, maybe Nolan Arenado, and that was about it. And then now later in the season, you have 3, 4, 5 guys rolling. Starting pitcher goes in the day and says, okay, I can't let this guy beat me. Can't let this guy beat me. Can't let this guy beat me. The lineup just got so incredibly deep that you had to pitch to everybody, and the Cardinals were making you pay, and they were hitting a lot of home runs and winning games just by outslugging teams, which the Cardinals have not been doing, even in years past of division and postseason runs. This team's offense is on another level right now.
It seems like Tyler O'Neill is in the highlight reels every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was thinking about the beginning of the year, if you're going to write down who's going to be a huge factor in September in shaping the postseason, Tyler O'Neill didn't make my top 2,000 names there. And yet here we are. I'm not saying he's the MVP. I think Goldschmidt and the run that he went on, where he was unbelievable, but it just seemed like O'Neill may be one of those spark plugs on the team who just is in the middle of every rally, at least from an outsider looking in and observing the recent winning streak.
100%. And he's part of this outfield of Dylan Carlson, Harrison Bader, and Tyler O'Neill. In my opinion, when they are at their best and when they're all going, that's one of the best outfields in all of baseball. Every single one of them can impact the game on every single level, both sides of the ball at a high level. When Harrison Bader isn't trying to swing for the fences and isn't striking out, he can impact the game with his speed on the bases. Dylan Carlson has a great glove and arm and a decent enough bat at this time. And like you said, O'Neill is in the middle of everything. Even when the Cardinals were losing a lot of games in June, Tyler O'Neill made a game-saving catch against the Dodgers to rob Mookie Betts. All three of these guys, just not against that, all three of these guys can impact the game at a high level. And Tyler O'Neill this season has been one of the outfielders that the Cardinals didn't guess right, but got right. Because you've got the Adolis Garcias and the Randy Arozarenas of the world that are leaving and making an immediate impact on their teams. The Cardinals were able to sit and wait with Tyler O'Neill, and he's rewarded them at bare minimum for one season.
When you look at this team and kind of talking about how good the Dodgers have been all year compared to how hot the team for the Cardinals have been here recently, the marathon of the 162-game stretch is who's hot at the right time. Is this a dangerous spot, Jeff, for the Cardinals, regardless of Mad Max being on the mound?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it boils down to is what I said at the beginning, that anything can happen in one game. I do believe, even with the Cardinals' recent hot streaks, the Dodgers are a better team than the Cardinals. I think if it was a 7-game series, I'd feel really confident. A 5-game series, I'd feel pretty confident. A 1-game series, you know, I don't think confidence is quite the word that I would use, but that has more to do with the natures of baseball than anything else. I think the Cardinals are a really good team that is destined to lose a wild card game, you know.
All right. Well, look, I think this is going to be an interesting series. And here's my bold prediction. The Dodgers will beat the Cardinals on a home run walk-off by Albert Pujols. So that was my prediction. Hey, let's give a big thanks to Jeff Snyder. And let's give a big thanks to Lucas Smith. We're going to be talking with Ben Kaspic, who is the host of Locked On Giants. Remember the Giants? You know, the team with the best team in the record of baseball.
They have a locked on crop
the top of our power rankings here. Hey, thanks so much and have fun at the wild card game. And what a weird matchup it's going to be. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts that you need. Why endure often pointless and seemingly intimidating questioning and wait for the person behind the counter to order the parts on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and their prices are reliably low for every customer. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution for your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now to see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there. How did you hear about us, box? So they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need are at rockauto.com. Best team in baseball in terms of wins and losses. Which team is going to have home field advantage all the way through Game 7 of the World Series? That would be my father's team, the San Francisco Giants. And what better person to talk to than my dad? But unfortunately, he's no longer with us, and we don't have a Ouija board. We have the next best thing. We have Ben Kaspic, the host of Locked On Giants. Your team just won 107 ball games. No Giants team has ever done that. What the heck?
I can't believe it myself. I mean, 107 wins. The Dodgers tied a franchise record of their own with 106, and it wasn't enough. And it was this team, this 2021 team. It wasn't, you know, Mays and McCovey. It wasn't Bonds and Kent. It was, you know, Kevin Gausman and Anthony DeSclafani and Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford in their mid-30s, winning 107 games, the most they've ever won in franchise history. It's truly unbelievable. I'm pinching myself right now.
As a fan, Ben, of a franchise that a lot of those guys you mentioned came from, I just want to say you're welcome. Reds didn't want those. No, I'm just kidding. This has had to have been quite a ride for you all season long, because every time you turn around, you had this guy or this analyst telling you, yeah, they're fine now, but it's just not going to work out, or the collapse is coming. They're going to lose soon. Like, What has been your Zen workout that you've had each day to just kind of keep calm through this season? Because this has been phenomenal to watch in that they never did. They just got on top, they stayed on top, and they rode it all the way to the end.
I mean, it's been stressful at the end. There's no doubt about it, because that Dodgers team just would not quit. And I think they ended the season on a 7-game winning streak, and they came back from a couple of 4-run deficits or 5-run deficits in the last few days of the season. So the Giants, at a certain point, it became clear they were not going to get any help. And so you're absolutely right. It's felt like this team has had its foot on the gas pedal the entire time, and they had to. They literally had to, because the Dodgers finished 1 game behind. And I mean, the head-to-head matchups with the Dodgers were unbelievable. The Giants went 10-9 against LA, needed every single win that they had. And some of their games, I mean, there was a robbed home run that was would have been a walk-off home run by Albert Pujols that was robbed. And if you think about it, if that ball goes over the fence, then we're not sitting here talking about the Giants winning the division. But it really has felt like they showed up every day with, you know, the preparation that this new coaching staff does and gets the players ready is, I think, second to none. And they showed up every day with a plan on how to win that day's game, kind of micro focus like that. And it turned into 107 wins.
I have to eat a little bit of crow here, because I have been I've been not Gabe Kapler's biggest supporter all in the truncated season last year. I could not believe they didn't hand the car keys over to one of Bruce Bochy's lieutenants, like Hansel Newlands or Ron Wotus or Roberto Kelly, like one of the people in their coaching staff. I thought, well, Bochy's going to leave, but they're going to give it one of his, you know, the transition will be easy. And they brought in Kapler, who I did not think did anything worth of note in Philadelphia. And I was vehemently against the Kapler hiring. I want him fired after last year. And I have to do a mea culpa and say I was wrong. He did a fantastic job this year, and maybe he needed to have, like, Francona stubbed his toe a little bit when he managed in Philadelphia before coming to the Red Sox. Maybe he needed to have that little experience managing a major league team and then have the things fall into place. But what I'll also say, though, is that the Giants are better than the sum of their parts. When you look at they look like a team that I thought the Giants were going to contend. I thought they were going to contend for the second wildcard spot. And I thought they were going to be a high 80s, low 90s team. And you look at the parts, yeah, this team will contend for that, along with the Brewers and the Mets and the Padres and blah, blah, blah. To win 107 games, I don't see how these pieces add together to do that. But here we are.
I know. It's truly incredible. Like I said, they've never had this many wins ever, dating back to 1883 when they came into existence. The most they had ever won was 106, and that was in, you know, like 1905. And so, yeah, I mean, nobody really can see 107 wins coming almost for any team, let alone this team. I mean, preseason over under for them was like 75.5 wins. So it is incredible. They got really good production out of, like, Brandon Crawford and Buster Posey, like star level production. And then the other thing they've done well is that just every single guy was good. They didn't give any playing time to anybody who kind of dragged them down at all. Every single guy was good. And so I guess if you add up not just 25 or 26, but like 35, 40 different players who contributed at some point this year, because, you know, the way this Giants team operated is it wasn't just a set group. They have minor league depth as well. And, you know, there's some guys who are in AAA right now who contributed in a big way to this season who didn't get to be there today because the team is so deep. So if you add up just like 40 good players, it can lead to 107 wins. And their run differential suggests that they were basically as good as they ended up. So they legitimately earned this. And still, at the end of the day, even I, who was much higher on the team and Kapler and Farhan Zaidi, their president of baseball operations, than most, my bold prediction coming into the year was 86 and 76. That was my bold prediction, and they topped it by 21 wins. Amazing.
When you look at this playoff scenario, the way that it's going to bring out either the Cardinals or the Dodgers. I don't want to ask you who you want to face, because I think that one would just be, well, you want to face the Cardinals or you want to face the Dodgers to get back at them or really kind of drive that final nail in the coffin. Me as a fan with nothing in it would love to see the Giants and the Dodgers, but break down the matchups that the Giants have between those two teams.
Well, on the Cardinals, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt used to be in this division, and those guys, I think Sully probably knows, those guys especially, well, Arenado, they both tortured the Giants when they were in the NL West. And so that's kind of an underlying story that would come into play if the Cardinals are in fact the team that wins the wild card game. I would say talent-wise, I think if you're trying to just win the series and you had to pick a team to face, I think you'd rather face the Cardinals. I think that's not a big secret, but you know, as a fan, I think Giants Dodgers would be really, really compelling. Giants have always played that team tough, even through this stretch of excellence that the Dodgers have had. Giants have played them, I think, about as tough as anybody, if not better than anybody, including this year. I mean, the Dodgers won 106 games and the Giants went 10-9 against them. And so either way, I think the Giants will feel confident, but you know, we'll see. We'll just, hopefully it goes, you know, 20 innings and they tire each other out.
Let me ask you one last question here. Does it feel strange to have a Giants team this good in an odd year?
A little bit. I mean, for a while there, for sure. It was 10, 12, 14, even 16. They made the playoffs, but didn't make it any other year. So this is the first playoff odd year team since I think 2003. So yeah,
2003 when they lost to the Marlins.
Yeah, won 100 games and lost in the first round. So yeah, you know, that's an omen that, you know, you can't, just because you have a great regular season doesn't mean playoff success. But it's a tremendous accomplishment, even if they don't, you know, win the World Series. What they did this year, I think they shocked the baseball world truly, and it's a tremendous accomplishment.
Well, let me tell you something. 106 wins is not a guarantee for the division series, but 80 some odd is. And that's what the Atlanta Braves and the Milwaukee Brewers are going to be facing off in the all former Hank Aaron team series that's going on in the division series. We're going to have Jake Mastriani and Dylan Short on to talk about that in just a moment. Ben Caspick, good luck with the Hum Babies going on. I just dated myself by referring to them as the Hum Babies. That was what the 1987 National League West champions were nicknamed, because of Roger Craig, that's like to call his team, oh, they're Hum Babies. But right, those in the days of Candlestick, and Candlestick doesn't even exist anymore. They are condos. But one person who I think should be living in those condos is Ben Caspick of Locked On Giants. I didn't know how to tie that back. Thanks for joining us here, and good luck in the postseason.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
Let's talk about betonline.ag. We are back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back for another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. The new updated site and interface and even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And don't forget to use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From football, baseball, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Las Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is where the game starts. Continuing our postseason previews, the one matchup in the division series we know is going to happen is the Atlanta Braves and the Milwaukee Brewers in the division series. 106 wins does not guarantee you a spot in the division series, but less than 90 does, evidently. The Braves and the Brewers, the all-Henry Aaron series. And we have Dylan Short and Jake Mastriani from Locked On Braves and Locked On Brewers as our guests here. How you doing, guys?
Hey, doing great.
I'm here as always, man.
All right, cool. So Jeff and I were talking a little bit about this matchup before you fellas arrived. And Jeff, why don't you share what we both feel about one of the teams involved in this particular matchup?
Well, Sully, it's strange because we did not prepare this at all, but both you and me agree that the winner of the World Series will be the Milwaukee Brewers. So that might tell you where we're leaning on this series. Dylan, change our minds.
Also, I can understand pretty much exactly what you're thinking of, is that nobody has a better 1-2-3 in the postseason than going through Burns, Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to tell you right now is you may be shocked to learn that even before Devin Williams lost a fight with a wall, a la Waskar and Noah, the Braves actually had a better bullpen than the Brewers, even with those two in there. So take out Devin Williams, and now you're basically praying that those three members of the Brewers team go 8 innings and that Josh Hader does not have any implosions, knowing full well that Hader as a lefty means that if Ozzie Albies comes up to the plate, you now get to face superstar right-handed Ozzie Albies, Freddie, who can hit anybody, period, Jorge Soler, who just hits nukes at 118 miles an hour, or what have you. I think the Braves are a more well-rounded team, frankly, especially offensively. I think that the Braves are one of these teams that if you get good starts out of Charlie Morton, which is really why they brought Charlie in there, Charlie's one of the better postseason pitchers in baseball, Max Fried, who's an absolute stud, he's got a lot of Charlie to him in that he wants the ball in every big situation. That third starter, Ian is going to make a big change in this bullpen or in this rotation. Ian had some really good starts in last year's postseason. He also had a pretty bad start in his final one against LA. So I think it's going to come down to the starters. Honestly, I think the winner of this series, I agree with you, whoever wins this series wins the World Series. And I say that because I think that the Cardinals are going to pull their devil magic out and they're going to knock off the Dodgers. But I think that this is going to be I think this is actually the best matchup of the postseason, bar none. I think the two teams are very, very similar. Offensively, like I said, you'd be shocked to know that the Braves' bullpen was better than the Brewers. A lot of people would probably be shocked to know that the Brewers' offense was just as good as the Braves' offense in nearly every category. So this is a very good matchup for both of these teams.
Jake, what are your thoughts of him trash-talking your team like that?
I mean, I don't completely disagree. I do obviously think the Brewers are favorite and should be because of those three starters that you mentioned, because you know you said you have to hope they go 7 or 8 innings. Well, I feel pretty confident they will. And I still feel pretty confident, you know, Craig Counsell hasn't used Josh Hader as a multi-innings reliever all year. He's been really limiting his innings, his usage. And I think that's gonna come all off in the postseason, especially with Devin Williams out. I think you could see Hader, you know, pitch multiple inning games in the postseason if needed. And you mentioned the offense. This team was a very different offense in the second half. You know, they made the Willy Adames trade. That was earlier in the year. But getting Eduardo Ebar was really huge at the deadline. The offense take off as well. So, and you really can't judge the offense off the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks either. They've been banged up. Avisel Garcia's been banged up. Eduardo Escobar, Rowdy Tellez, you know, have been banged up. This lineup hasn't really played together a lot lately, which does concern me a little bit. I was kind of hoping, you know, they'd have more time to gel this past week, but just, you know, haven't really been able to get the whole lineup together and healthy. But when they are together and are healthy, it really is a good lineup, you know, 1 through 8 and 9, because Woodruff and Burns can hit too. So it's a really good offense. Like Dylan said, I think the offense gets overshadowed a little bit because of how great the starting pitching is. But yeah, certainly, I mean, they're going to lean on, you know, Burns, Woodruff, Peralta, Hader, again, Boxberger, who's been great all year, is going to have to step up into that 8th inning role. They may have to lean on a young guy like Aaron Ashby to step up in the bullpen as well. Jake Cousins has been good. Hunter Strickland's been good. So they have, you know, a lot of arms out there, some good depth in the pitching staff as well. Eric Lauer has been really amazing as well. So they have depth even in the starting rotation as well. Adrian Hauser has been good. So, I mean, they just have a lot of depth at pitching. I think the lineup, you know, at full strength is very deep as well.
I want to point out one thing that is truly remarkable about Atlanta's run, because, you know, remember, this was a team that I believe was sub 500 at the trade deadline. And
one of three teams, actually.
Yeah. And they bought at the trade deadline. There was every reason, especially after the Acuña injury, to wave the white flag and say, hey, not our year. We got injured. Now, not saying to blow everything up, but I thought it would have been a smart move for the Braves to say, hey, they're not going to win this year. Let's take every player who we're probably going to non-tender or whatever, see if we can get a minor leaguer or two out of it, wave the white flag, and regroup for next year. And they did the exact opposite. And bringing in Soler turned out to be one of the biggest under-the-radar best trades made in, you know, it's funny when people try to say who won the trade deadline. Nobody was talking about Jorge Soler being picked up by the Braves, but he turned out to be a tremendous piece. And the fact that they bought, they took over the division in the middle of August, and they were helped by the collapse of the Mets, but they took control of the division and swept the Phillies when they needed to, or beat the Phillies when they needed to beat them. And taking a look at their record, they're sub 90 wins, but you take a look at their last month and a half, and they're right alongside any of the powerhouse teams.
And you take a look at their run differential, and I think it's plus 126 on the year. They've scored plenty of runs. Their Pythagorean record, if you get into anything like that, is 90-plus wins, which is generally what it was. Now, Sully, you and I have talked a few times this year. I thought they were a 100-win ball club, obviously with Acuna. I certainly think that this year they played below expectations. I think what you saw in the second half was a lot more like what we expected most of the season to be. Now, you can talk about losing Acuna. You can obviously talk about what happened with Marcelo Ozuna, losing Mike Soroka, seven different catchers. There's a lot of things that went wrong. I don't think that that really – I don't think that that's a good excuse, because even without those, like you and I mentioned when we talked about should the Braves sell or not. This team was always
wrong. I turned out to be wrong. I thought they should have sold.
This team was always the most balanced. They were always the most well-balanced team in the division. And just because they weren't performing, they could not get all three phases working at the same time in games. And it was just at that point, you could tell it clearly got in their heads. I mean, they had that stretch right before the All-Star break. It was 17 consecutive games of alternating wins and losses where they just could not string together a run. And sometimes that happens for young teams that kind of jump ahead of themselves, like coming off of last season where they were two innings away from a World Series that personally, I think they would have won. It can get tough when you're not playing the way that you think that you should be playing. Overall though, I'm going to mess with the Brewers a little bit, obviously, because we're matching up here. And the NL Central's kind of not good either. But the NL East is certainly no strongman division either. So I think that these are two teams that if you were to take them both and put them into each other's division, I think the Brewers would probably win a few more games. Now, I think you'd still be looking at very similar teams. I think that you could pick these two teams up and put them in pretty much any other division, aside from maybe the West, and you'd see them have very similar records. I think they're very, very close together. It's actually my favorite one, not just because I'm a Braves fan, but as a baseball fan, this is actually the one that I think is the most compelling to watch.
Interesting.
I like it. So to sum up really quick, because we're running short on time in this awesome segment, looking forward to this division series, what is the biggest concern for both of you? And I'll start with Jake.
Christian Yelich. it's weird to say that for a Brewers team, but I have no idea what we're going to get out of Christian Yelich. And I've been saying it all year, and I still don't know what we're going to get out of Christian Yelich. I mean, if he is the MVP bat that he can be, then I have no doubts about the Brewers winning this series. But I mean, if he's the Punch and Judy type hitter that we've seen the past, you know, month or so, and not, you know, driving the ball into the gaps, hitting home runs, then I don't know, because they need that big bat in the middle. Like I said, I know Adames and Escobar have really helped out there to fill in that big bat that they've been missing. But he's the biggest concern for me. Devin Williams being out is a huge concern, because it does leave, you know, a big gap there in the eighth inning. Like I said, I think Hader may be thrust into pitch, you know, inning in a third, inning in a two-thirds now because of that very reason. It's going to put a lot more stress on him and the rest of the guys in the bullpen. So that's probably my two biggest concerns. You know, what are they going to get out of Yelich, and what's going to happen in those seventh and eighth innings now with Devin Williams gone?
I think for me, I'd say Christian Yelich as well. It would be pretty prototypical Braves for a guy that's had an awful season, but who typically tortures the Braves to come out and get hot at the worst possible opportunity. I would say Will Smith, but I'm just going to couch that and say Snicker in and of itself, because Will Smith should not be pitching your highest leverage inning. At best, he's probably third or fourth in the rotation for the Braves bullpen about who should get the high leverage inning, but he's going to be the one that closes out the games. And we can argue whether or not that closing is the highest leverage. Some people are going to say the final three outs are the hardest. Some people are going to say, no, just use your best guy to get the best outs. I tend to fall on the other side of that aspect, in which case Tyler Matzek and Luke Jackson should be the two guys playing matchups essentially. But that's not how it's going to happen, for better or worse. It's going to be Snicker's going to roll with Will Smith in the ninth inning, and every single time out there, he gets your heart rate up. So I think the hard thing, I'd say the lineup, but I mean, there's pretty much one strategy when you face these three. It's make sure you make them pay for the three or four mistake pitches they're going to give you in a game. If you don't make them pay, you're not going to string together hitters. You're not going to string together hits and runs. You're going to have to hit the long ball. So you're going to have to do something. They're not going to walk you, particularly Burns and Woodruff. So you got to take advantage when they make a mistake pitch.
Well, we know that the spirit of Henry Aaron is going to be watching a series between Milwaukee and the Braves with a lot of interest. And we should all watch it because it's one of the most evenly matched series, and especially in a best of five, where if the road team steals one of those first two games, it could make the rest of the series really exciting. Dylan Short, Jake Mastriani of Locked On Braves, Locked On Brewers, thanks so much for being part of the Locked On MLB playoff preview.
Thanks, guys.
Yes.
Well, Sully, this has been a lot of fun breaking down these playoffs, getting a chance to talk with all the different Locked On hosts from all the different teams. Also, super huge shout out to the guys and gals who made our videos talking about just teams that players that just beat their team and they hated them. Javi Reyes, Miller Thomas, Connor Newcomb, Ryan Finkelstein, Jason Burke, and Nash Walker. Thank you guys so much. You have helped make this show awesome. And Sully, most importantly, big thanks to getting the chance to do this with you. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to talk with you, Jeff Carr. You've been a friend of the podcast for a long time, been a guest, and now you've been co-piloting this with me. This was fantastic. We should do this again.
I am absolutely down for that. It feels like we keep taking our relationship to the next level. So I like that.
Absolutely. Idea. Well, let's go on here. Well, this has been, you could follow Jeff Carr at Jeff with a middle F. So it's Jeff with three Fs. Two Fs are not enough. For Jeff Carr, I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Talking about all the teams in the playoffs, which are now lined up and set up. This has been Locked On MLB's postseason preview. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan, with Jeff Carr. What can people call me?
They can call you Sully. Sorry.
And you need to keep listening to the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is indeed your team every day. Have this be your first listen, folks, to Delu.